Do you have a healthy eating and exercise plan? And is it working? The original reason why you started to eat that way or exercise that way or both, what did you want the outcome to be? And I always ask four questions about any eating or exercise plan. Do you jump out of bed with energy, enthusiasm, and excitement for your day and maintain energy throughout the day? Are you performing at your best in everything that you need to do as a unique individual person? Because obviously we all have different reasons for performing at different things. Do you love what you see in the mirror? And when you're in the shower and you have to touch your own body, do you love how it feels? And whatever result that you want from your eating and exercise plan, are you getting it? And I always ask, should we be able to demand that? Whatever reason you decided to do something with your health and fitness, your body, whatever your goals are, the plan that you've decided to use to get the outcome, should we be able to demand that outcome? And I'd love to say yes, but unfortunately, I'm sure you've heard plenty of people share this. No, I don't have a stack of energy, or no, I'm not performing at my best, or no, my body doesn't look the way I want it to, or I'm getting my results too slowly, and no, I'm not getting the ultimate outcome that I wanted from this eating and exercise plan. So what do people do then? Often they change plans, or they find a different guru, or they start a different diet, or they stop altogether because it's all too frustrating. So as an exercise professional, what do we need to do? A, to get people started on their eating and exercise plan to get the results that they want. And how do we guarantee that they're going to get them? Can we guarantee it? Maybe there's a better question. What are the reasons why people don't get the result that they want? And there's probably 100, if not 1,000 reasons. But what if we have a look at some of the fundamentals of anatomy and physiology, how the human body works, that might suggest if you're not getting the results that you want, or your clients or the people that are in your life that are exercising and they're constantly saying to you, this isn't working. What if we asked these questions, or if we had a toolbox full of tools that could help? So here's some great tools. One of the really important questions to ask, obviously, is what is the outcome specifically that you want? Is it possible that if I just say, well, eventually, hopefully, maybe I want to lose some weight, or eventually, hopefully, maybe I want to have more energy, or eventually, hopefully, maybe I want this to happen with my body? Is it possible that without a specific goal, something to focus on, that our brain and our body doesn't have anything really to even think about when we're exercising, or why we would choose healthy food? So there's the great question, what exactly do you want? But what about the why? The people that you work with, if you are an exercise professional, if you're a coach, your athletes, what is their outcome and why do they want it? What's their driving force? And is it possible that if people don't have a strong enough why, or they're doing it for perhaps the wrong reason? Now, I have no right to suggest what's a right or wrong reason, but if somebody's doing it for somebody else, or they're doing it because they think they have to, or they're doing it to try and please somebody else, or because they want other people to like them, is it possible that they might not get the results that they want from their eating and exercise plan? So, for example, having been an exercise professional for a very long time, this is one of the things that I often hear. I'm doing this because my partner doesn't find me attractive, or my husband's told me that I have to come to the gym, or my wife said I have to lose weight. And is it possible that if we're trying to please other people and we're not doing this for ourselves, that the outcome might be difficult, if not impossible? So there's a great thing to ask. Am I getting the result that I want? Specifically, what do I want? And why am I doing it? And do I have some really big, strong reasons why I want to do it? So that's the psychology. Interestingly, again, what about a real big picture vision, an actual visualization of me achieving my goal? If I don't believe that I can do it, and I always use this example, when I ask somebody who's about to run a marathon, do you know that you can run marathon? The answer is often, yes, I believe that I can. But ultimately, we don't know really that we can do something until we've done it. So what do we need to do as exercise professionals to make sure that people can visualize, can see with their own brain and perhaps with their own eyes that this goal is possible? And that's one of the powerful things about visualization. Obviously, Olympic athletes and elite athletes and world champions use visualization all the time. Even if they've never won a gold medal, they visualize themselves winning the gold medal. Even if they've never won the grand final, they actually visualize themselves standing on the stage holding up the grand final cup. And that according to the brain scientists, the psychologists, psychiatrists, and neuroscientists, our brain doesn't really know the difference, apparently, between real and fantasy or imagination. If we can see it in our brain, we're more likely to achieve it. So as an exercise professional, a great question to ask, we now have some very powerful tools to create pictures for people. We can Photoshop people into a picture of them achieving their goal. If somebody wants to run a marathon, where is the marathon? Which one is it, of course? What day is it going to be on? And then a photo of them running under the finish line in the time that they want to run it. And if they can see that picture every day, is it more likely that they will achieve the goal because their brain can now visualize that can actually do it. So yes, why do you want to do it? Where and when specifically, and have we created a picture for people to be able to see it happening? We don't know we can do it until we've done it. But again, the brain experts suggest that we can trick our brain into believing that we have done it. So now we believe that we can. Woohoo! So once I've got the psychology sorted, do I need to keep focusing on the psychology? And it's been suggested that we forget, or like having a shower. We need to do it every day. Motivation is something that we need to be able to produce, either self-motivation or motivation for our clients. We need to keep doing it. So that's why there's that powerful tool of how will you feel if you achieve your goal, and how will you feel if you don't achieve your goal? And ask your client, your athlete, the person that you're working with, to create and share with you those words. Because when you're training with somebody, when they get tired, or when they feel like stopping, or when they feel like giving up, or when they've had enough, or it's too hot or too cold, they're some of the great questions that you can ask and the words that you can use. How will you feel when you win the grand final? And you share with me that you'll feel powerful and strong, and you'll feel like a champion. Obviously, they're your client's words, and you need to use their words, versus how will you feel if you don't achieve those goals? You've shared with me that you're going to feel like shit, and you're going to feel disappointed, and you're going to feel really bad about yourself. So let's do two more. So they're the words, the powerful emotional attachment that we as a coach, as a professional exercise, personal exercise coach, we can link to our clients' goals while they're training. And would that help them to train harder? And that of course is the psychology of exercise, but the physiology of achieving our goals, of course, is that we have to train hard. And now let's ask the question, if I've got the psychology sorted, so I know exactly what I want, exactly why I want to do it, I know exactly when and where I'm going to do it, and I've got an emotional attachment to that goal because I know how I will feel, and I'm focusing on how I will feel if I achieve the goal and how I'll feel if I don't achieve the goal. And by the way, we need to find out which one is most confronting, inspiring, motivating for each individual person, because some people are really inspired and motivated by winning, and other people are just really angry if they lose, and that can be the powerful driving force for them to keep going. So once I've got the emotional side sorted and I know exactly how to tap into my clients, my athletes, the person I care about, the person I'm training, even if I'm training myself, I can tap into my own psychology. What are the reasons why then people don't achieve their goals physiologically? So is it possible that people don't achieve their goals psychologically or emotionally because they don't have a specific goal? They don't know exactly why they want to achieve it. They can't see themselves achieving it, and they haven't got an emotional attachment to it, or they're doing it for somebody else. So that could be a big reason why somebody's goals aren't achieved. But now physiologically, what happens? Why do people exercise and not get the result that they want? And of course, now comes anatomy and physiology. And as an exercise professional, obviously, we really need to learn and understand how the human body works and the connection between the physiological response of exercise and the psychological response. So as we know, the body's not going to change if we don't force it to. So could that be a really important question to ask if a person isn't achieving their goals physiologically? Is, am I overloading? Am I stimulating? Am I forcing this body to change? If we keep doing more of what we can do, we're not going to get any fitter. We're not going to get any stronger. So a lot of people do a lot of walking or a lot of light lifting or a lot of time exercising, but it doesn't matter how long you exercise for, that's not what makes change. We have to overload, stimulate, force the body to change. So a really great question to ask is my client, athlete, the person I care about, the person I'm training, are they getting fitter and are they getting stronger, and am I testing that? Because if I'm not getting fitter and I'm not getting stronger, I'm not going to make any physiological changes. And those two, as we know, are very easy to measure. So to get fit, I've got to get puffed. And after I've gotten puffed, I have to recover before I can get puffed again. So there's two things we can test there very simply if somebody's getting fitter. Yes, we have to push them till they get puffed. So there's the first question. The people that I'm training, are they just plodding along, or am I forcing them to overload their heart and lungs, respiratory cardiovascular system, which then fires up their endocrine and central nervous system, which forces the body to change, forces the body to get fitter. So am I getting my athletes puffed? Am I getting my clients puffed? And if they are getting puffed, how long does it take them to recover? And that's pretty easy to measure. And the shorter the distance between the time I can go again, obviously the fitter I'm getting. So some people, you get them to get puffed and it's going to take 3-4 minutes, maybe even 3-4 hours before they can go again, before their heart rate's back to normal. But an elite athlete, somebody that's really fit, physiologically fit, can go again within seconds. So it might be 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, but you can actually measure that. So there's a great question to ask. If I want my athlete to get fit, if I want my client to get fit, because fit causes, a fit body now has a different chemical makeup, it has a different physiological response to everything that I do, a different physiological response to food, to exercise, to brain chemistry. A fit body does different things. It works more effectively. But I can't get fit if I don't overload my heart and lungs. So am I getting my people puffed? And then am I measuring how long it takes them to recover? And the second measurement, of course, is their resting heart rate. So if somebody has a resting heart rate of 70 or 80, and you can bring that down to 60 and then 55 and then maybe 50 and 40, now you've got somebody that's really fit and a body that's really fit. And I just get excited when I share this. As we know, a fit body becomes a fast food, calorie and fat burning, carbohydrate burning, sugar burning machine. A fit body becomes a happy drug pumping machine. So our neurotransmitters are on fire. It becomes a body that can control its own endocrine hormonal system. So we become the master of our hormones, not the other way around. A fit body has great hair, great skin, great nails, a great posture. Everything gets around the body more effectively from a nutrition point of view, so everything works better. And of course, a strong, I'll go to strong in a minute, but a fit body will have a better immune system, because when you fire up your immune system, everything can get to where it's got to go quicker. So if you get a germ in your body, if you're a really fit person, your immune system from inside your bones fires up and can get to that place, whatever needs fixing, as quickly as possible, because you've got a fit body. So physiological question number one, am I getting my athletes and my clients puffed? Are they recovering fast, and what's their resting heart rate? The next thing, of course, is strong, that we perhaps should consider strong before even fit, or do they go together? Because if I'm trying to get puffed, but I've got a weak body, so I can't get fit without being puffed. But if I'm really weak, how hard can I actually puff? If I've got weak muscles and weak bones and my body can't respond quickly because it's too weak, then how fast can I actually sprint? So here's a great question. Are your athletes, your clients, the people that you care about, yourself, are you getting stronger? And again, really easy to measure. If somebody says, how do I get stronger, or how do I know that I'm getting stronger? What can you lift, and what can you lift next time, and what can you lift next time? So if you want a body that's capable of sprinting to get puffed so that you can get fit, so you can turn your body into a happy drug pumping, fat burning, food burning machine that can fight germs, bugs and viruses, and you feel fantastic because your brain's full of happy neurochemicals, then I've got to have a strong body to be able to do that. And a strong body comes from overloading every muscle and bone in my body. Not one of them, not five of them, not 55 of them, all of them. So how do I know that each of my muscles and bones are getting stronger? Wouldn't it be easy to test by what can I lift now and what can I lift next? So if you are, and it's exactly the same as any exercise, if I keep doing the same thing over and over, I can already do that. I'm not forcing my body to change. So to get stronger, I have to be able to lift heavier. Now, whether that is a barbell, a dumbbell, a kettlebell, a box of rocks, a wheelbarrow full of sand, or a heavier bottle of water, or a heavier child, it doesn't matter. As long as every time I'm exercising my body physically to get stronger, I'm actually getting stronger and easy to measure. So somebody that goes to the gym or lifts heavy or lifts, picks something up to get stronger on a regular basis, but they're not getting stronger, then how can they then get fitter? Because their body can't force, you can't force a body to puff harder if it doesn't have the strength to do it. So why don't we get stronger? And that's the big reason probably why most people don't get results. Is if you understand, as I'm sure you do as an exercise professional, the simple physiology of strength training, of getting stronger, is that when I lift something really heavy, that's not when I'm getting stronger, obviously. I lift something heavy, I put micro tears in the muscles, I fire up the endocrine system to its full capacity, I fire up the central nervous system to its full capacity. Obviously, then my, because I've got to digest food to get to the right working muscles to get to the, to send nutrients to where I need them, my digestive system has to work. Every part of my body has to work really hard for me to lift something heavy. And as you know, if you lift something heavy, you'll also get puffs. So respiratory and cardiovascular systems working really hard. Hormonal system has to fire up to peak performance. That all requires recovery time. So it's not about I'm lifting heavy. It's yes, you have to lift heavy to provide the stimulus, of course. But that then requires recovery time. Now, the other really interesting one is that when you get puffed and when you lift heavy, you literally pump happy drugs into your brain, but to produce neuroplasticity and to produce neurogenesis, which is brain change and growing new brain cells, that all happens when we're resting. So the third question I have to ask, and we'll start from the top. Number one, have I got the headspace and the psychology of my client or my athlete? Do I understand what's going on there? Because they won't get a result if I don't understand what the driving force is. Number two is, are they really fit? If they're not getting puffed, they're not going to get fit. And if they're not fit, they're not going to turn their body. They're not going to make changes with their body. And then if they're not getting stronger, then I can't get them fitter because a weak body can't push hard enough. Obviously, the next one then is, are they resting long enough? So a great question to ask. If you think you've got your headspace sorted and you think you're pushing really hard physically to get puffed and you're pushing really hard to overload your muscles and bones, and that's a really important question. Am I lifting as heavy as I can? Not how many times am I going to the gym and how many exercises am I doing and how many repetitions am I doing? That's not what causes overload, of course. The only thing that causes a muscle or a bone or the endocrine system or the central nervous system to fire up and get stronger is to overload. So I've got to do more. I have to put more demand on my body than it's used to. So if I can lift 20 kilos and I keep lifting 20 kilos, I'm not putting an overload on my body. If I can lift 20 and now I try and lift 22 and a half or 25, now I'm stimulating, now I'm forcing change. But now we've got to make the connection. When I lift heavy, I break down the body, catabolic state. As we know, we put micro tears in the muscle, the endocrine system works hard, the central nervous system works really hard, and now I have to let them recover. And it's not just recover, they have to repair from the damage that we've done because we've caused overload. Then they have to recover from the workout. Then they have to regenerate and super compensate. The only way we get stronger is when we rest, and we have to give our body long enough to rest. So could that be one of the reasons why people aren't getting results? They're pushing hard physically to get puffed, to get fit. They're lifting really heavy to overload to get stronger, but then they're not resting for long enough. Now, there's a lot of different questions to ask there, and one of the really interesting things to take note of is, could it be different for everybody? Is it possible that every one of the people that you ever train, every athlete, every person who asks for your help or advice, is it possible that they are unique and different? So yes, everybody's got to get puffed to get fit and everybody's got to overload to get strong. But is it possible that both of those will be determined by, yes, somebody's genetics? their lifestyle, how much sleep they're getting, what kind of nutrition they're getting, what are their stress levels, how many children do they have, what's going on in their life that affects their life. So some people might not need as much rest as others. Some people might be able to get puffed 4, 5, 10 times every single day, and other people it's only a couple of times because they need time to recover. Their life is placing a lot of stress on them. So if you keep putting more stress on their body physically, then they're not going to recover. So would it be a really important question to ask as an exercise professional, as a coach, as somebody who wants the people in your life to get results, or even more importantly, if this is about you, if you think you're doing all the things that you need to do to have the or to get the results that you want and have the body that you want, are you psychologically focused? Do you know specifically what you want and why you want it, and a specific day, date and time that you want to achieve it? And are you focused on achieving it and emotionally attached to it? Are you getting puffed enough? Are you pushing your body hard enough so that it can get fit? And the only way to do that is to make sure that you're strong. So are you continually getting stronger? And that will only happen if you're resting enough. And that's the beautiful way to test. Very difficult to sprint if you're tired, and you won't be able to put in a big effort. One of the easiest ways to tell if your central nervous system is needs more recovery time, if it's too overloaded, is you don't feel like exercising. You feel tired and lethargic. You don't feel like going to sprint, and you're not getting stronger. So how disappointing, how sad would it be to go and do a sprint session, but you sprinted slower than last time? How sad if you go to lift something heavy and you have to lift less than last time? That's called diminishing returns. So not are you not only getting better, you're getting worse. And that's not because of your exercise program. It's been suggested by the best exercise physiologists in the world, who really understand how the human body works. And as an exercise professional, shouldn't we understand that the body can't get fitter and stronger if it's not getting enough rest, if it's not getting enough recovery time? So please have a look at what's happening in your life. And I'll ask those questions again. If you really want to have a stack of energy so that everything you do, you can perform at your best. And those two questions go together, of course, because if you go for a sprint session, you need a stack of energy and you want to perform at your best every time you sprint. If you go to lift something heavy, you need to have a stack of energy and you want to be able to perform at your best. When you do that, you're going to have a body that looks good in the mirror and it feels good in the shower. And whatever result that you want to get, whatever your result is, whether it's to win the grand final, ski for 7 days in the mountains in the middle of winter, dance on a dance floor for 24 days on a holiday every night and be able to drink copious amounts of alcohol, have 5 babies, handle stress at work, overcome challenges, doesn't matter what you want your body to be fit and strong for. If you are fit, getting puffed, if you are strong, overloading muscles and bones and forcing them to get stronger so that you can puff, and then resting long enough for them to recover and be able to perform again at their best. So again, every time you exercise, do you have a stack of energy, and are you performing that exercise session at your best? Is it possible that you'll get all the results that you want? Now, the next part, of course, is people talk about food. Interestingly, about food, if you have a really fit body and a really strong body, this is where the brain connection comes in. So obviously when I lift heavy and when I puff, I produce epinephrine, adrenaline, so that I can move, I can lift, I can punch, I can jump high, I can do my physical activity. Once I've stopped exercising and those two drugs have been pumped through my system, that sends another neurotransmitting message to my brain to say, dopamine, reward drug, this person's kicked ass, they've sprinted, they've lifted heavy, they're going to feel rewarded and fantastic. And I use the word fantastic for a reason, because if you've done a great exercise session where you've worked at peak performance with a stack of energy, you will pump dopamine into your brain, a reward drug. You'll also have a stack of serotonin in your brain, which is a satisfaction drug. So you'll feel satisfied with your life, with your exercise session. You'll feel really good about yourself. Ha ha. And then, of course, you pump brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is fertilizer for your brain. And often we talk about food being really important and maybe not as important as exercise. And of course, is it possible that both are really important? What's the use of having great fuel in a body that doesn't do anything? And what's the use of having a body that's doing stuff if you don't put great fuel in it? But is it possible that if I get really fit and really strong, that I'll make better decisions about my food? So which comes first? Do we try and force people to change their eating habits? Or do we find a way for them to get puffed and to lift something heavy so we're pumping brain-derived neurotropic factor into their brain so they can start to think more clearly and make better decisions? Now, I don't have an answer for that because is it possible that every single person is unique and different? Is it possible that some people will be really happy to change their eating plan straight away? Other people don't want to change anything that they're doing. Is it possible that some people are not interested in doing any kind of sprinting or lifting anything heavy, but if you can start putting some more effective or nutritious food into their body, they might start feeling better? Is it possible that as an exercise professional, we need to tap into the psychology of our client, each individual client? So yes, we know we've got to get people puffed. Yes, we know we've got to get them to overload their muscles and bones by lifting something heavy. Yes, we know they've got to get the right amount of rest. And how do we measure that? If somebody's getting stronger and somebody's getting fitter, we know that they're getting enough rest. How do we know how to tap into their psychology? Is it possible we've got to ask all of those questions? Some things we can test for physically and other things we just have to ask. Do you want to get the best results possible? It seems like a stupid question. Why would you want to get second best results? There's one of those great questions I always ask people. If there was a faster, quicker, better way to do this, is that something you'd like to chat about? Even if you are getting results and you think that your exercise program eating plan is working for you, if there was a faster, quicker, better way, is that something you'd like to chat about? And I ask that question because a lot of people, because they've been doing something for such a long time, they might be scared of changing. So they're not getting the results that they want. They're not getting them fast enough. They've been doing the same old boring thing for a really long time, hoping it's eventually going to work. But if they're not getting fitter, getting puffed, if they're not getting stronger, overloading muscles and bones, central nervous system, endocrine system, then those things are just not going to happen. So as an exercise professional, isn't it exciting that we get to use all of those tools? We can use the psychology tools, we can use the physiology tools, we can combine them together to help each individual unique person get the results that they want. I'm excited about what exercise does for my human body. I'm sure you're excited about what it can do for yours, but how do we make it work for everybody? And is it possible that everybody's different and we can't expect that what works for us is going to work for somebody else? And here's a really interesting analogy I just heard from a great exercise physiologist. Imagine going into a shop and there's a mannequin in the window, and the mannequin's beautiful. It's got a beautiful, obviously a nice hard body, and it looks great in a certain outfit. So I go into the shop and I say to the shop person, can you please give me that outfit? I want that exact outfit that's on the mannequin. And the shop person or retail assistant will say, well, what size are you? And you say, no, I want that one. I want what that mannequin's wearing because it makes that mannequin look good. Sounds a bit silly because obviously that mannequin might not be the same size as you, the same shape as you. There's a whole heap of different variables that's going on there. And ideally, if you like that particular look, what do we need to do to adjust whatever is available so that it suits you? So you might put that outfit on and it looks better in a different color, in a different size. You might pick a different shirt compared to the pair of pants until you find what works best for you. And is it possible that we spend too much time looking at mannequins? We look at beautiful bodies and we say, I'm going to do exactly what they're doing. But do we have the same genetics? Do we have the same sleep patterns? Do we have the same energy levels? Do we have the same stress levels? Do we have the same lifestyle? Do we have the same family? There are so many variables that will affect how fit we can get, how strong we can get, how much rest we're getting, and how connected we are to emotionally and psychologically to our goals. So I always ask this question, as an exercise professional, is it our responsibility to know yet? To know, to very in-depth and understand how to get a human body fit? Is it important that we understand how to get a human body really strong? Because a strong body can then get fitter, because we can't puff harder if we have a weak body. And then after that, is it really important that we treat each person as an individual? There's not one size fits all. Some people might take 5 days to recover from a workout. Some might take 10. Some people might be able to do 4 sprints an hour like I do, and other people that might just be too much, they become overloaded, they just need to do 2 sprints an hour or 1 sprint a day. Is it possible that some people sleep beautifully for 3 hours every night and that's all they need because they sleep really deep and wake up full of energy, and there's other people that need to get a full 8 hours, otherwise they just feel terrible all day long? Is it possible that some people want to be vegan vegetarians and would never want to put animal products into their body? And is it possible that some people only want to eat animals and nothing else? As an exercise professional, isn't it great that we have the tools? We understand how to get somebody fit, and we can then customize a fitness program to suit that particular person. We know how to get people strong, so we can customize a program to get that unique individual person strong in a way that will suit their lifestyle and the things that they love to do or don't like to do. And isn't it exciting that we can customize a healthy eating plan to suit what that person loves to eat, and never give them what they don't like to eat, and make sure that whatever we give them is going to fit into their lifestyle. They're going to either love it, enjoy it, be excited about it, want to do it. And is that the ultimate outcome to our results? If I want to do it, if I'm excited about doing it, is it more likely that I'll actually do it rather than have to do some long, boring program that some guru on the social media platforms of the world have shared is the only way to train? But I don't have their genetics, I don't have their lifestyle, I don't have their limb length, I don't have their sleep patterns. My life's completely different. So as an exercise professional, should we be customizing and personalizing each individual fitness and strength program and eating plan to each of our individual clients so they can get the best results for them? Could that be a great question? Woohoo!